We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome Caregiver Dave Nissany. Dave, how are you, man? What's going on?
I'm doing great. We're getting closer and closer to my film launch. Just can't wait. Can't
And
wait, can't wait, can't wait.
we talk about documentaries, we talk about films. Dave is a great guy now, as he's experienced. When we first started in this celebrity segment together, he really was not in, he was in the entertainment, he wrote the books. He did the podcast, but now he is really into that game and he looks forward. So I'm excited to welcome Irv Berner. Irv, thanks for stopping by, man, from Songbirds. How are you? And I appreciate you coming on the show.
I'm good, and thank you for having us.
All right, so let's talk about Irv, your background really quickly before we go into Songbirds and stuff like that, so we can learn more about who you are and how this came about.
It's a long story, but try to make it quick. I was, a musician all my life. When I was 8 years old, I saw the Beatles and Ed Sullivan, and it kind of went from there. We've heard that story before, I'm sure. Started playing guitar, back in the '60s. And I've grown vintage just like these guitars.
Like a fine wine, it gets better, but doesn't it?
I'm hoping so. But I was a musician. I got into retail for years, and then over the years, I worked alongside a guy named David Davidson, and David became a vintage guitar dealer, and Dave ended up starting this museum with a couple of other people. And when they were about to open, they needed somebody to run it. And running a museum, there's a lot of different facets, a lot of customer service. You got a gift shop, so you got a retail end of it. And music history and knowing the guitars you're talking about. And I kind of covered a lot of those bases. So he brought me on board to help open the museum and manage it, hire and train the staff. And that's how I got started with it.
And so that's interesting. And I'm going to go to Dave after that. Just a really quick follow-up question. A museum, I mean, thinking about an undertaking like that, just because of, your experience as a musician and understanding the value of guitars, how do they kind of differentiate you from other museums? What would you say?
Well, it's similar to an art museum. We look at these guitars as works of art. They've certainly got beautiful design factors, but it's just a vintage guitar museum. And it was not a museum. It was not guitars that were owned by famous people like a Hard Rock Cafe or that type of thing. The museum was about the guitars and the people that created the guitars, designed the guitars, and really the strong point of the museum, just to back it up a little bit, was really the solid body electric guitar. And that was which really first came out in 1950. And the strong point of our museum was really 1950 to 1965 into 1970, a little bit. That's when all those classic guitars were designed by Fender, Gibson, Rickenbacker, Gretsch, and again, talking mainly solid body. The museum did have a great collection of vintage acoustic guitars, steel body dobros, that kind of stuff, an amazing banjo collection. There was
Tell me
really no
about
other collection like this.
your first acquisition, $25,000 guitar.
It started off with this collector with buying a 1954 Stratocaster
That's the year I
on
was
eBay.
born.
Yeah, that was the first year the Stratocaster came out. That's when it was introduced. And so this gentleman bought a first year Stratocaster from Dave Davidson, and then Dave and this and the gentleman that bought the guitar, he reached out to Dave. I think he bought a couple more, and a relationship began. And next thing you know, Dave is helping to guide this gentleman over the next 20 years on what to buy, what not to buy. And he only bought the best. Dave would look at him. When Dave went off on his own and opened up his own shop, I remember Dave looking at me at one point and telling me, I'm not gonna sell guitars that were refinished, where I had broken headstocks that were repaired, or what we would call player quality guitars. He says, everything I'm going to carry is just all original. It's, you know, and so everything he would sell was museum quality. And the quality of this collection was truly unsurpassed.
So, Irv, undertaking a museum like that, getting the guitar, the collection of guitars, who really started to become really attracted to attend to go to the museum to check out this amazing works of guitars? How did like that marketing work to get the word out? And who are like your real people that really love coming to this museum?
Well, it's funny you ask, and that I know your background. I wish I knew you 6 years ago, because most people that came to this museum were guitar players, and the biggest problem for us was we felt this museum like any other museum was for everybody. And when I did tours, and I trained my staff, I would tell everybody, when you do a tour and you got a husband and wife, and 9 out of 10 times the husband's the guitar player. I said, when you're doing that tour, you talk to the wife. Not necessarily you don't look at the husband, but that's your audience, is the wife. And it's got to be interesting, and you got to keep them engaged. The old saying in that movie, I had you at hello. You had me at hello. Well, I used to say we got the guitar players the minute they walk in the door, because you'd look at pictures of the museum online and it looked amazing. But when you walked in and saw it in person in 3D and whatever, it was really a wow factor. So that was the audience going for that. Now, that being said, it was an uphill struggle from the day we opened to the day we closed.
Is it ever going to open again?
Unfortunately, not as it was. The space has been taken over by the Songbirds Foundation. They've created new exhibits catering to a younger audience, more to kids, talking about how instruments work, how effects pedals work, history of music, that kind of thing. And they've got some great displays, and they're doing live music again in Chattanooga. So it's a great room to see live music.
So, Irv, basically the documentary, who approached you to do the documentary?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Who approached you to do the documentary about this?
Nobody approached us. It was it's another interesting story how this happened. We weren't planning on making a movie. This really kind of happened. I like to say it really happened organically. The day I heard it did it for me, this was a dream job. This was just I was in heaven, you know. And when I heard it was closing, I mean, I was literally fighting tears. It just broke my heart. And the first thing that went through my head, I never thought of the fact that, well, maybe I'm losing a job. Maybe, I never thought of any of that kind of thing. The first thing I thought of is that all my friends from up north, or all these people I knew from around the world that were talking about finally making it this year to come see this place, were not going to get to see it. And we had never done a coffee table book, something I wanted to do, but it was a big expense. So we kind of put that off in the back burner for a while. So there was no proper record that this place ever existed. So when I heard that, I kind of freaked out. And my last, and you know, I was told we're closing, and we were closing in 1 week. So I would go into work every day for that last week with my iPhone and run around filming the showcases, talking into my phone, trying to get a record, some sort of cheesy record that I could put together. 2 days before we finally closed, I get a phone call that there's a videographer in town who wants to come in and videotape the staff, interview the staff, kind of saying goodbye to the community, thanking the community, and that kind of thing. So I get in that day, and I see some other people being interviewed. Then it's my turn, I get interviewed, and then they're taking a break. And that was my point, as I'm saying, I've got to do this. So I grabbed the director, Dagan Beckett. He was the gentleman doing the video that day. I say, Dagan, do me a favor, come with me into my office for a second. I got to talk to you. I bring him into the office, I shut the door, and I look at him, and I tell him basically what I just told you. This museum is closing. We never did a book. We don't have any record that this place existed. It's going away in 2 days. And that's it. I said, I've got no money, I've got no budget, I got nothing to offer you. And if you say no, I completely get it. But would you be willing to come back the day after we close and follow me around from the front of the museum to the back, giving a tour, just so we have it on tape? And to my surprise, he goes, absolutely, let's do it.
Wow.
Unbeknownst to me, he had thought about doing a documentary in this place 2 years earlier when he was working for a local television station. So it was in the back of his head. So he comes in, he films me for a couple of days, going from the front to the back. And then he says, okay, I'm kind of busy. Give me a couple of weeks or months and let me edit it. I'll put it together. When I got something, I'll call you. I said, great. 2 months later, I had a boy, I get a call. And he says, Irv, I got 30 minutes of footage that I put together. I want you to see. Why don't you come over to my house and tell me what you think? And I get over there not knowing what he's got, you know, just thinking I'm going to look at the tour or something. And he's taken bits of the tour, other things he had filmed that day when he was interviewing the staff, and things he had done over the last few years. And he put it together where he was telling a story about the museum, which blew my mind that he took. Yeah. It's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. He took all these pieces and put it together and was telling this story. And that's kind of how it started. You know, he asked me what I thought. I started giving advice. You know, well, this is right, but this, you know, we're talking about this, but you're showing this guitar on screen when it should be this guitar. And so I helped him to kind of fine tune little things like that. And then he would say, well, I got an idea. I'd like to interview this guy. Can we go into the recording studio you guys have and film it in that backdrop? So I'd get him in and we do that. And over the next year, we just started putting it together.
Wow. You're so fortunate. That is rare, and rare that you found somebody who had a vision and was even planning on doing it a couple of years earlier. Now it's saved for posterity.
Like I said, when I saw the finished product and how he put it together, it was
Every great movie has to have a great story to it.
Well, that was Dagan's whole thing. It was all about the story and what we're going to put in, what we're not going to put in the movie, you know, just to keep it kind of focused and interesting, you know. So I think the story for him was really about the museum, the collection, and also the live music.
So when do we get to see this?
Well, it was finally released last week. It's on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, I think YouTube TV, you know.
And what is it called?
Songbirds. I think when you search for it, sometimes I'll put Songbirds in, and there's another older movie that comes up and some other stuff. But if you put in Songbirds documentary, you should be able to find it.
So one question.
I'll watch it tonight.
Because Dave's a huge music fan, right? Oh,
yeah.
So, and I want to get, he has a movie out too. Dave does, about his life. And he could talk about that in a couple of minutes as well. But I wanted to go back to the question, Irv. Basically, the story, it talks about the museum. What kind of history are we going to learn from this documentary?
Well, you'll learn, first thing you'll learn is really kind of why these vintage guitars suddenly became so expensive and so valuable. You know, there was a point where, you know, it was just a used guitar. You know, back in 1967, 65, if you wanted to buy an old Sunburst Les Paul, you know, which they made between 58 and 60, it was probably $200 used, you know, maybe $175 used. By 1980, they were like $5,000.
Oh my God.
Today, they start around $250,000.
Oh my gosh. So just imagine you would have invested, bought them like you were buying them. That's a pretty good investment.
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball back then.
Exactly. Do you have Willie Nelson's famous guitar in there yet? Or he's still playing?
No, I think Willie's still using it.
He calls it by a woman's name. What's the name of that guitar? I forgot. I'm looking it up.
I'm forgetting. Yeah.
So, Irv, regarding the guitars, which ones, like in the history, you're talking about Songbirds, of the famous guitarists that have guitars in the museum?
Well, we talk about... I'm trying to think. Well, we talk about the old Les Pauls. There are certain particular guitars we show off in the museum. There was a prototype of a rosewood body Stratocaster. Fender had done a short run of rosewood body Fender Telecasters in 1968. It was a limited run of just like 150, 200, whatever it was. And the very first one was given to George Harrison, which when you saw the movie Get Back, which was, you know, Let It Be that they just re-released, when they're playing on the rooftop, that's what George is playing, that rosewood body Telecaster. After they made the Telecasters, they decided to do a run of Stratocasters. They started to make two, The very first one was going to go to Jimi Hendrix, and it was the only one that was ever finished. He died before it was finished, so it never left the Fender factory, and we eventually acquired it, and so you'll see that in the movie. You'll see a lot of old Les Pauls, Flying V's, Gretsches. I mean, there's a little something for everybody. But again, it's really not just a it's not just about guitars, where it's gonna be where you got to be a guitar player to be interested in this. It's more to the movie than that.
Trigger is the
It's
name
really
of Willie Nelson's guitar, by the way.
what was that?
Trigger is the name
Trigger,
of
right?
Willie
I was
Nelson's
thinking.
guitar. Wow, this is amazing. So you're getting a lot of publicity from all over the world, people coming out of the woodwork, talking about this movie.
A little bit, we don't, frankly, our budget for marketing it properly has been limited, so it's really grassroots, and that's why we're grateful that you've had us on here
Awesome.
today. We're just trying to get the word out there because, and like I said, it's a little bit for everybody, and it's really about this business. It was this amazing museum that unfortunately, due to COVID, had to close. So it's a real reflection of the times in the last couple of years, what happened.
Now,
Yeah.
talking about the types of history, like kind of explain the documentary how it works without giving it away. Meaning, like you watch the movie. How does it start out? Because you said they filmed the whole museum. How did you kind of, who's involved in the documentary? Are there other people but yourself? Kind of explain that.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, we've got artists being interviewed. Joe Bonamassa is just a great guitar player, and he's a collector himself. He knows vintage guitars, and he was actually the first person to really see the museum. He got in a week before we were open. He came to Nashville, called up a gentleman at Gibson Guitars, and they called us, and we had him come in a week before to see what we were doing as we were still putting it together. So you got people like Joe Bonamassa. There's a clip with Eric Johnson, another great guitar player, trying out that Rosewood Stratocaster I was talking about. John Schneider's in it, but a few other people. One of the first scenes is a one of our is our last customer at the counter buying a t-shirt before we closed. So she's interviewed, and so we got some locals. We talk with there's some local there's a local band that performs in the clip. We talk about the local music scene in Chattanooga.
I don't think this is the end for you guys. Don't be surprised if somebody knocks on your door wanting to do more with this thing.
Well, yeah, we've kind of got an idea to do another music type of documentary, in the next year or two. We're working on something, but I really don't want to talk about anything today.
Do you hope, Irv, that somehow this could be build interest to bring back the museum in its full way ever again?
Unfortunately, the collection is at this point is being sold off. So it's unfortunately not going to happen again. This gentleman put this collection together over 20 years, and it's really hard to describe it. It's just imagine going to the greatest art museums in the world and handpicking the best pieces and putting it in one place. That's what this was to the guitar world.
Are
It was
they
on that
auctioning it
guitar. That's
off?
got to
make guitarists all over the world upset about it closing, especially when they're touring and they're in Nashville to come right over to Chattanooga is not far at all.
Oh yeah, it was it again it was it's hard to put into words. Vince Gill came through it, and he's another gentleman who collects a lot of guitars, and he was just staggered by again the not just the quantity but the quality of the guitars, the prototypes, the one of a kinds. So it was extremely interesting to see how certain models progressed over time. Great story. One morning I'm at work and I'm in the back of the museum. We had a room called the Vault where we had the most expensive guitars, where you'd get a private tour in there. And one of my guys comes back and he goes, Irv, G.E. Smith is here up front. He wants to take a look at the museum. It was like 10 o'clock. We had just opened. So I go to the front of the museum and there's G.E. Smith, who's, led the Saturday Night Live band in the 80s, was with Hall and Oates in the 80s, great guitar player, just played with Dylan, played with everybody. And he looks at me. He's with Jim Wilder. Him and Jim Wilder do a great act called the Masters of the Telecaster. Two fabulous guitar players. Shouldn't miss it when they come around. So GE looks at me and he says, "Look, you know, we're just coming from Nashville. We got a show in Atlanta tonight. But on the way here, I think it was Joe Bonamassa and Mitch Colby said, you got to stop this place on your way. You're going to pass it. Don't miss this. You got to see it." So he looks at me and goes, "What do you got?" So I started laughing because I knew that the very first guitar hanging, we had what's called a timeline in the front. And we had three sections, a 50s section, a 60s, and a 70s. And it shows the first solid body guitar starting in 1950 with the first models Leo Fender came out with, going through to the first Gibson models like the Les Paul and all that, into the 70s where the quality started to decline. So I knew that the first guitar hanging there once belonged to G.E. Smith. So I said, "Come with me, I'll show you." And I bring him to the front of the 50s section. And I start to show him what we got, telling him the history, which he knows already because he's an avid collector. He's got, you know, probably 700 guitars of his own sitting around at any given time. And as he's looking at the guitar and he's looking at this, there's a case at the bottom covered with decals. An old case from the 50s with these old decals from the 50s, except for one newer decal. And he's going back and forth and finally looks at me and goes, "That was my guitar." I go, "I know. And when we get to the 60s, I'll show you another one of yours."
All right.
We had a few of his guitars in our collection.
Sure. Where's the best place we can connect, learn more about you? But Dave has one more question, then we'll get to, again, where we can find. Dave, go ahead with your caregiving question and a little bit about the documentary, and then ask Irv his final question.
Well, I was a normal guy with my wife. We've been married 25 years at that time, and then she has this headache, turns into a stroke. She becomes paralyzed on one side, loses her speech. Next 2 years was rough, you know, the grief process. But then we both reinvented ourselves. She decided she's going to do everything she did before with only one arm and one leg working and basically duct tape over her mouth. She's become pretty amazing, like a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. And I've been traveling the world, you know, I've spoken on 53 TV shows, just as many stages, Harvard, NASDAQ, Carnegie Hall, just helping caregivers to stay alive, not doing what I did, because 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do. So now they're making a film about my life, follow me around for 3 years, and now it's going to be premiered next month. They're trying to get it into Sundance Film Festival, and it's just about, you know, my story, my wife's story, how we turn tragedy into triumph, you know, and now in many circles, we're kind of famous. So my question to you there, Irv, is how has caregiving touched your life?
What was that? I'm sorry.
How has caregiving, you know, caring for someone who needs some care, touched your life, or has it?
When you say in my, you know, regards to the museum or
caregiving, caregiving for you, like,
are you married? You got the parents that are still alive?
I'm sorry.
You know?
No, my parents unfortunately are not alive. How has caregiving touched my life?
Have you ever gone through a sickness where somebody had to care for you until you got better, you know, broken arm, broken leg? Have you ever had to care for somebody, you know, close to you because there was no one else to do it?
Nothing like you.
You are a very fortunate guy, my friend.
I know that. My wife.
Would.
Yeah, I know my wife went through that. Her mother had a stroke, and it's a very, very rough thing.
There you go.
You know, I remember when my father died. I mean, just, you know, caring for my mother, you know, we weren't, you know, she was down in Florida, but I remember I called her out obviously much more often on a regular basis, almost daily. And
you know, you're on caregivers. That's why I started a caregiverdave.com website just as support. You know, you need support. You need to learn how to you know, not say no to help when people want to help you. You need to learn, put your own oxygen mask on first. You need to take care of yourself. Don't neglect your friends. Find a support group that you can vent to, you know. And so all of that stuff's on caregiverdave.com and my book, It's Your Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver.
These are things that definitely Irv is, out there, and it's amazing that what people like Dave can do. And what you're doing, keeping this museum alive. You got to be happy. So where can we check out the documentary again, Irv?
Working, it's Amazon Prime, Apple TV, YouTube TV, and I believe a few other, possibly a few other streaming channels, smaller, not as popular, but it's out there. Songbirds documentary, check it out.
How's it doing?
It's just been out for a week, so we're not sure yet. We've reached out to the distribution company. We're waiting to hear. I'm extremely curious myself.
Anybody marketing it or promoting it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
he's got publicists and stuff like that, Dave, for sure.
Good, good.
Yeah, he's got things
Yeah.
out there, and there's some big people involved. And Irv, what I think is what's really awesome that's happening is specifically enough getting it to the guitar people, finding
Yeah.
them. Everyone's gonna love this because of
They're the
history and
passion.
different things, and maybe the History Channel or somebody will pick it up after this documentary. So you never know where you can go next. It's just getting out the word and see who
Yeah.
you can meet. So
Even
appreciate it.
word of mouth is very, very powerful. You get it among the guitar people, and it'll go to the moon.
Exactly.
That's what we're hoping for with social media. That's what it's all like, sending out one big chain letter, and hopefully it'll
Exactly.
just
It happened.
snowball.
And you, if you will, it'll happen. I appreciate it, Irv, you stopping by, and take care, guys. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That was the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment, guys. Take care.